So Om Ganat Simranda Sya Ganam Jana Smataya Chakshuram Minikam Ganatasmani Shivamima. The reason the appendix is necessary is because in the description of the Lord's Moshalila means the Lord's disappearance pastimes, there is some illusory pastimes there that may bewilder people into thinking that Krishna has a material body. And those illusory pastimes are there specifically to keep the atheists away. Like Krishna says in the Gita, Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrata mudoyam vabijanati. He says that those who are envious of me, I cover with my deluding potency yogamaya samavrata. It means to cover with yogamaya. Of course, mahamaya is the expansion of yogamaya. So in this way, Krishna explains, they will never know me. So those who are envious of Krishna, Krishna gives them opportunity to be atheists. Not only opportunity, but philosophy. And not only that, he gives them intelligence how to be atheists. As Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, Matak Smritir Jnanam Apolanam Cha, giving remembrance, forgetfulness, and knowledge. So that remembrance, forgetfulness, and knowledge is given according to one's desire. So if you desire to forget Krishna, Krishna will give you full facility. That's the meaning of independence of the soul, free will. So Krishna gives full facility. So in the pastimes of Krishna's disappearance from this world, there's this illusory activity whereby this hunter, his name is Jara. I think you've read that when you've been previously reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah, remember the pastime? He has this arrowhead that is made from that club we described yesterday that was ground up to bits. And he shoots it at Krishna's foot. And then Krishna appears to pass away like any mortal person passes away. Of course, that hunter, his name or previous incarnation was Brigha Muni. And Brigha Muni had committed many offenses against the Lord. Of course, one of the main offenses was that he kicked the Lord in the chest when he was testing to see if Krishna or Vishnu was in the mode of goodness. And therefore, Lakshmi left Vishnu being so upset. There's a whole other story I'm not going to tell right now that culminates in the appearance of the Tirupati deity, but the Tirupati deity. So that story is not applicable right now. But in any case, this Brigha Muni, he was cursed to become a hunter, a low-class Kurata hunter, and he shot the arrow at Krishna's foot, and he apologized for it, and Krishna said, this was my plan. So this is very bewildering to hear about these things. Isn't it? I mean, Krishna gets shot in the foot. Of course, usually people get shot in the foot, they don't leave their bodies. So in one sense, the hunter, you know, in an esoteric sense, was taking shelter at the Lord's feet of Krishna. And even in the battle of Kurukshetra, we find that Krishna many times was hit by arrows. And there was some apparent blood coming from the arrows. Of course, it's described in the Isopanishad, Ashnavi Ram. That means Krishna doesn't have veins. So Krishna's body is Satchit Ananda, full of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. So Krishna still exhibited that as a pastime that there was apparent blood. And it's described by Srila Prabhupada that because those arrows that were shot at Krishna were coming from grandfather Bhishma, Krishna experienced it like a lover's bite. Now, I don't understand these things in a sannyasi. I don't go biting my disciples to express my love for them. And I don't know what that means. But Prabhupada explained it. It's like a lover's bite. Those of you who are grahastas will understand that more than me. How that's love in the material world, it's hard for me to understand. You know, crocodile also bites and he's not in love. So Prabhupada explained that. that the arrows that were hitting Krishna were experienced by him like loving exchange. In other words, loving exchange. Of course, as we mentioned the other day, that there are seven indirect rasas, and one of those is ghastliness or anger, and these are parts of the loving, tasty exchanges Krishna has with his devotees. Even his devotees sometimes act as his enemies, like in the case of Jaya and Vijaya, who became Aranyakashipu, Nanyaksha, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Shishupala, Bhagavatra, like that. So, that's another level of understanding these things. In any case, Krishna doesn't have a material body. We find that out from the first verse of the Brahma Sanhita, and also in the Bhagavad Gita, Jopi Sanu, Yatma, Bhutanam, Chirokusham, Bhakti Vishwam, Vistaya, Sabhavadi, Yatmamaya, many different statements like that. So in order to clarify this, the acharyas have written appendices on the this particular volume of the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's why it's necessary for me to read this particular appendix. And therefore, this particular appendix is known as the absolute nature of the Supreme Lord. So we're going to read the premise, and hopefully we can finish it today. If not, we'll continue. So it starts, in his commentary on text 5, chapter 30, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur quotes several statements by Sri Uddhava from the Srimad Bhagavatam in the third canto, second chapter, texts 7 to 12, that nicely explain the transcendental nature of Lord Krishna's disappearance from this world. So that's the topic. The topic is Lord Krishna's disappearance, janma, karma, cha me dimyam, evam yoveti tatvataha, jatva deham purna janma, naiti mam eti sojana. It is so important to understand this point, because as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, one who understands that they're transcendental, he never takes birth in the material world again, isn't it? Chaktva deham, upon giving up this body, pura janma, doesn't happen again, 90, mameti sojana, but he comes to Krishna. And Krishna explains this to Arjuna. So that's why it's very important. This is also something in the nature of knowledge of the Absolute. It's called Sambandha Gyan. There's three aspects of knowledge that we present to people. Everybody understands that? First one is Sambandha Gyan, which means the nature of the Supreme Lord, the nature of his activities, the nature of the material world, the nature of the jiva souls, the nature of time, the nature of karma. All these things, the nature of, and that's Sambandha. Abhideya means what you do about that knowledge. In other words, how to become Krishna conscious. Sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti. And prayojana means the pastimes of Krishna and the spiritual world, entering into one's eternal relationship with Krishna, the goal. So the 10th canto deals with primarily prayojana tattva. That means the spiritual world. What's happening? In Dwarka, Mathura, Vrindavan, that's 10th canto. And so the 11th goes, it's not a deviation, it goes into more describing the nature of the Supreme Lord and his pastimes, and the nature of the material world like that. All right, so on that note, we'll continue reading. The reader is referred to that portion of Srila Prabhupada Srimad Bhagavatam for further illumination on this subject. As reference to the third canto, there's a statement by Uddhava. Next, from various Vedic literatures, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur cites many important verses that clearly establish the absolute eternal nature of the personality of Godhead's forms, names, abodes, qualities, pastimes, and entourage. Entourage means his associates, for those of you who don't know English that well. So, now we're going to hear about forms. Forms means the Supreme Lord and his various incarnations. And it's very interesting. I was listening to Srila Prabhupada this morning. I don't know, I guess we'll take a long time to go through this for the sake of pages. And Prabhupada was describing the manifestation of Balaram. And it was such an interesting description, I thought I should relate it in class, because I listen to Prabhupada's lectures every morning before class. Prabhupada was talking about how Balaram, the definition, one of the different descriptions of Balaram is Balaram's Prakash Vigraha. And the word Prakash basically means the light, you know, to illuminate, basically to illuminate, more than like Prakash. Like I have some Gujarati friends that are called Prakash, their first name. So Balaram's business, even though he's Krishna himself, Advaita Chuta Nadir Ananta Rupa Madhyam Purana Purusham Yavi Yavanamcha, is to illuminate Krishna's activities and pastimes. And so Balaram appears in Kali Yuga as who? Nityananda. So Nityananda is also considered Prakash Vigraha, which means he illuminates or carries forth or illustrates the pastimes of who? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, Lord Nityananda was the first one to go on door-to-door Sankirtan. Lord Chaitanya went out and had his Sankirtan parties where he woke everyone up. You know, Jeev Jagar would wake up. Just like here in New Taliban, sometimes we'd like to go to everybody's house and wake them up. Those people who live even close to the temple don't come to see the deities every day. We have to have this culture. It's like in Jaipur, if you go there, the whole city goes to see the deities before they go to work in the morning. Not Mangalarti, but, you know, before they go to work. So it's very important to establish the deities as the lords of this whole community. So, anyway, so Balaram, Nityananda, is Prakash Vigraha. So he illuminates, or shines a light, or illustrates Lord Chaitanya and his pastimes, Lord Krishna and his pastimes. Interesting, isn't it? I never understood before I heard Prabhupada's lecture why Balaram was called Prakash Vigraha. And Prabhupada actually went into great detail. It's a wonderful description. Devotees should regularly listen to Prabhupada's classes, lectures, conversations, morning walks, everything like that. So, anyway. So, all these different manifestations of the Lord are different forms of the Lord. Like, Balaram is actually, looks different than Krishna. He's whitish, Krishna is blackish. And then you have various incarnations of the Lord that have different colors. The red incarnation, white incarnation, and of course, golden incarnation. Of course, everyone knows who that is. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, but they're all Advaita Chuta Nadir Ananta Rupam Ajam Purana Purusham Abhiyoganam Cha. They're all Krishna. And Prabhupada gives the example sometimes that a gentleman, he'll leave his home and he will go to work. He's the same person, but he appears differently. When he goes to work, he puts on a tie and a jacket. And everyone is addressing him, if he happens to be the boss, as boss. And when he goes home, the wife doesn't address him as boss. She addresses him as servant.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so.
I'm going to tell
Vibhusha
that. I like that.
Yeah, then you're going to repeat that when we visit Vibhusha today. So. So it's the same person, but he has different relationships, different dress. Everything's different, practically speaking. And of course, with the material body, we don't look completely different. But Prabhupada describes that Krishna is a dramatic actor on the stage. He puts on different guises. So Lord Varaha, Nrisimha, Kurma, and Vamanadeva, they're all the same person. There's no difference. As far as the Vishnu Tattva avatars, as far as the Shaktavesha avatars, they're actually Jiva souls in power. So here we're talking about forms. So they're all the same person in different forms. So that, let's read this quote from the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. It's the first chapter, text 38. It states, Govindam Sachidananda Vigraham Vrindavana Sura Burura Talashinam Satatam Samaruganoham Paramayastuja Doshayami. The transcendental prayers, I and the Maruts are always trying to satisfy Lord Govinda, whose personal form is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss, and who is sitting amidst the celestial desire trees of Vrindavan. Of course, this is very similar to the first verse of the Brahma Samhita, the fifth chapter, right? Krishna is the cause of all causes. He has a body made of eternity, bliss, and knowledge, etc. So, and the Gopal Tapanita Upanishad is actually accepted even by Vedic scholars. Like yesterday, we were talking about the different Vedas. You have the four Vedas, and after that, you have the Upanishads. So here, the Upanishads directly describe Krishna. Similarly, in his Vedanta Bhasha, Sripad Madhvacharya cites the following passage from the Shruti. Now, Shruti means the four original Vedas. And also the Upanishads, sometimes are considered Shruti. And the Smriti, they're the literatures. Smriti means to remember, Shruti means to hear. So the Smriti literatures, like the Itihasas, the histories, the Puranas, like Mahabharata, Ramayana, the Srimad Bhagavatam, of course. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is called the Amala Purana. Srila Jiva Goswami describes in his Tattva Sandarbha that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the only one of the Puranas that has not been touched or changed. That's interesting, isn't it? Because many times we find devotees, they pull so many quotes out of the Puranas, and we can't accept them with the same authenticity, because unless those quotes come down in disciplic succession, and specifically from Prabhupada. So just like right now it's Purushottam Mas, which is a very special month, but then we find the devotees going through all these different quotes from these Puranas, and we don't know the quotes are bona fide or not, because they're not from our acharyas. And they pull out all this stuff, and you know, we don't know. The only way we know something is if it comes in disciplic succession. So we have to be careful of not becoming Hindus. You know, there's that tendency in ISKCON to become Hindus, to accept things that have not come down in disciplic succession. Like that. Now, where have our acharyas done, like, worship of the demigods? Yet we find devotees sometimes getting into really heavy demigod worship, right? So, anyway, so things have to come down in disciplic succession. So here we find a quote from the Shruti given by Sri Pad Madhvacharya. This is a lengthy quote, so bear with me. Vasudeva Sankrishna Prajuna Niruda Hamatsha Kurma Varaha Narasingho Vamana Rama 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 Krishna Buddha Kalkiraham Chitadaham Sahasradaham Amitoham Anantoham Naivaite Jayante Naivaite Mriyante Naishamagyana Bando Namukti Sarva Heva Yite Purna Ajira Amrita Parama Paramanandaha. I am Vasudeva, Sankarshan, Prajuna, and Aniruddha. I am Matsya, Kurma, Varaha, Nasingha, Vamana, the three Ramas, Ramachandra, Parashuram, and Balaram, Krishna, Buddha, and Kalki. Immeasurable and unlimited, I appear in hundreds and thousands of forms, none of which ever takes birth or dies. These forms of mine are not bound by ignorance, nor do they have to strive for liberation. They are all complete, free from old age, immortal, supreme, and supremely blissful. So here, Krishna is saying the same thing as Jayadeva Goswami says in his Dasa Avatar Stotra. Keshavadrita Narahari Rupa, Keshavadrita Shukara Rupa, Keshavadrita Ramasharira, Keshavadrita Aladara Rupa, etc., that Krishna appears in these various forms. And of course, in the Bhagavatam, we hear the description in the first canto. Ete Tamsa Talakumsa, Krishna's two, Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna's the source of all these incarnations, the complete manifestation of Godhead. So Sripad Madhvacharya is verifying that Krishna has a spiritual body, and all these avatars also have spiritual bodies. Next, There's a quote from the Jana Bindu Upanishad. Actually, there's 108 principal Upanishads and 8 principal Upanishads. And Prabhupada, of course, presented us with the Ishopanishad. That was one of the first books that Srila Prabhupada translated. So the Jana Bindu Upanishad is stated, Yiradosha Purna Guna Vigraha Atma Tantra Ishchitadatmaka Sharira Gunascha Kinananda Matra Mukhapada Sarura Khadihi. The Lord's personal form possesses complete and faultless transcendental qualities. Indeed, the form of the completely independent Lord is free from all lifeless bodily characteristics. His lotus face and lotus feet consist simply of pure ecstasy. So all these quotes are given to establish that Krishna's body is not mundane. Remember at the beginning of class I discussed, it's in reference to the Moksha Lila, all these quotes. So the people don't get confused. And the Vedic system, the epistemological or knowledge system of establishing the truth is to quote from the Vedas. The Shrutis are considered infallible. And of course the Bhagavad Purana is considered infallible. The Bhagavad Gita is considered infallible. And I mentioned before, many of the other literatures have been changed through the ages because they haven't been passed down in descendant succession. So, this keeps the sampradaya intact. It keeps the sampradaya on the same track because we can always quote. It's not, I think. Like Prabhupada said, if you say, I think you're a rascal. Of course, on ordinary things you can say, I think. Like if I go into the garden and I say, I think that's a tomato plant. That doesn't mean I'm a rascal if it happens to be Loki squash. It doesn't mean I'm a rascal. It just means, you know, that's mundane things. So I can use the word I think in reference to mundane things. But if I use the word I think in reference to spiritual things, like I say, well, I think that I'm God. Or, you know, I think that Vishnu is superior to Krishna, and many Hindus, they will say that. And you always ask them, where does it say that? And they say, that's the way I was taught. You say, that's nonsense. You say, where does it say that in the Vedic literatures? And it doesn't. And you can approach practically anybody in any religion on that basis. Like if some Hindu, Muslim, Jew comes up with some philosophy. For example, the Christians sometimes say, animals have no souls. You ever hear that before from Christians? You just say to them, where does it say that in the Bible? Why does it say in the Bible that in the kingdom of God the lions and lambs will lay down together if they have no souls? And why do you keep a dog if it has no souls? Why don't you just keep a vacuum cleaner? Or why don't you go to Japan and get one of these robot pets? The Japanese are very expert in developing these, and they have robot. You could get a robot wife.
Wow, really? How much?
It's only $5,000. It never talks back, and when you unplug it, it's quiet. And Japanese are actually quite expert, isn't it? They have, you know, you can go into some Japanese department stores and the robot will show you around. So, but that's not, how much of a relationship can you have with a robot?
Pretty good one, it seems.
No. If you have psychological problems, you're a pretty good one. But your real relationship is with another living entity. So anyway, getting back to the point, the Christians may say the animals have no souls, therefore we can eat them. And even they say, nowadays, the baby in the womb has no soul. So we can kill it, right?
Yeah, I don't know if the Christians say that.
Well, some Christians, not the Baptists maybe, but many of the Christians believe in abortion. They say, well, the soul actually comes in at the time of birth, or you know, in later time in the pregnancy. This is all nonsense. Because it's all I think. Everything science is based on I think. But they know less than someone who is stupid. Because at least someone is stupid. Actually, this refers to in ancient Greece. It's discussed that Socrates was the most intelligent person in ancient Greece, in Athens, because he knew that he didn't know. But everyone else thought they knew. Because there was this oracle, Greek history, but there's this oracle at Delphi, who's, you know, the fortune teller, the ancient version of Pallad Mishuna. You know, in Greece, you understand what I mean. And so they would go to this oracle. It was actually a lady, and she would speak on behalf of the gods, and they would ask a question, my dear oracle. Who is the most intelligent person in Athens? And the oracle stated, Socrates! And the reason was because he knew he didn't know anything. And he was always engaged in the search for knowledge. So, Prabhupada actually talked about that. That was actually honesty, to admit that you don't know. So these modern philosophers, philologists, theologians, priests, rabbis, mullahs, brahmins, mostly they're all rascals because they always say, I think, right? That's what Prabhupada was very strong about this. Unless you can reference your statements. I mean, just like if you go into court and you're defending your client and you say to the judge, I think the law says this. Huh? The judge will say, where does the law say that? And you say, well, I think it sounds good. Then you're a rascal. So most people are rascals. Of course, we don't want to go out and tell everybody that when we're on Sankirtan. But we had, there was one devotee many, many years ago. Some of you may remember, he passed away. His name was Varnashram. Remember him? He would quote Prabhupada's classes when he was preaching to the non-devotees. He would say, you're like a hog, dog, a camel, and an ass. And of course, people didn't appreciate that much, especially the ass portion. So it was not so productive for Krishna consciousness or preaching Krishna consciousness. He's a very nice devotee. But he just copied Prabhupada instead of adapt. Prabhupada said, a preacher has to adapt the philosophy. Don't change it, but adapt it, you know, package it. You know, old wine in new bottles. And that's what Krishna West is for. So we'll continue reading. The Vasudeva Upanishad, so interesting, we're getting all these quotes from the Upanishad that justify. So we can use these quotes. Anybody who's preaching like to Indian people who are, I think they know about Krishna consciousness, can actually pull these quotes out. They should copy these quotes down in their notepad. Because it's a good way to defeat people who think they know that there's no God. I mean, most of the people from India, are impersonalists.
Yeah.
I mean, you just scratch below the surface. They talk about, oh, Govinda, oh, Krishna, oh, Ram. And then you find out they want to become Ram. Or they want to become Krishna. They think at the time, or they want to merge into Krishna. I mean, this impersonalism is so obnoxious, and it's our business. Like, that's our family business. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi, and not only Paschacha Dejitarni in the Western world; it's in India too. Nirvishesha Shunyavadi. All these different temples. They're impersonalists, or best, they're doing business with Krishna. You know, like going to Balaji and doing business with him. So anyway, so let's continue. The Vasudeva Upanishad states, Sadrupam Advayam Brahma Madhyad Nanta Vivarjitam Srupapam Sachinanandan Bhakja Jarati Chavyam. The Lord's transcendental form is the absolute truth, devoid of duality or of middle, beginning, or end. It is self-effulgent, eternal, and full of knowledge and bliss. Only through devotional service can one understand that form to be infallible. So another quote that justifies that. The Brahmananda Purana states, Nanda Braja Jananandi Sachidananda Vigraha, the body of the Lord who gives ecstasy through the residence of King Nanda's pastures, is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. The Mahavara Purana states, Sarve Nitya Shasvatas Cha Yastasha Paratmanaha Hanu Padmana Vahita Naiva Prabhati Jai Kochit. The bodies of that Supreme Lord are all eternal and primeval. Since they are not born of material nature, they are not subject to destruction or creation. I mean, it's very inspiring. For me, it's very inspiring to hear all these verses because it really establishes through the Puranas, through the Upanishads, through the Smriti, what our philosophy is. I mean, it really helps develop faith. Because not only for the non-devotees, we have to develop faith. And what is that? Vasudevam Sarvamiti. Vahunam Janmanamante. Yadavamam Prabhatate Vasudeva Sarvamiti Sarvamahapasudra. Coming to the point that Krishna is everything. You know, everything comes from Krishna. That's Chinchaveda Veda Tapa. Everything comes from Krishna. Ananda from Krishna. Simultaneously one and different from Krishna. That Krishna is everything. And then Krishna is in everyone's heart. Krishna is in every atom. Krishna is everywhere. So when we hear these things, it really helps us come to that realization. So these quotes are not just for the demons. And then Prabhupada, not Prabhupada, but Vridananda Maharaj and Prabhu Pranada Dhanapuru, a quote from the commentary. The Nrisimha Purana states, Yuge Yuge Vishnur Anadi Murti Mastaya Shishtam Paripati Dushtaha. In each age, Lord Vishnu assumes his various eternal forms in order to protect those who are civilized, the devotees, and to destroy those who are evil, the demons. The Brihad Vaishnava Smriti states, Yoveti Votikandeham Krishnasya Paramatmanaha Sasaravasman Vahishkarya Shoti Smarta Vinanataha Ukam Tasya Valokya Pi Sachela Snanamachuret. If a person thinks the body of the Supreme Lord Krishna is made of matter, he should be excluded from all ceremonies, both of the Shruti and the Smriti. One who even glances upon such a person's face must immediately take a bath with all of his clothes on. We've heard that quote before, that if you see a materialist or someone who's an offender, you're supposed to run to the Ganges and take a bath without even putting on your swimming suit. So how do we deal with that one? Maybe we should carry little spray bottles of Ganges water with us all day long. You know, whenever we see anybody else other than a pure Vaishnava, spray ourselves. No. The way we take a bath. Does anyone know the way we take a bath?
Mantra.
Chant Hare Krishna. Sarvapa Snapanam. It's also a bath. It's a complete bath. In the Lord Chaitanya Shikshasa is that Sarvapasnapana. Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan. It's a complete bath. That's one translation of that. You take a complete bath by chanting the Lord's holy name. So, in other words, Kirtaniya Siddhahari. And the only way to do that is Madanam Najana Nisindavi. Kavitam Vajaya Vishakame. Mama Janmani Janmani Shure. Anyway, I'm not going to give the whole Shishashtika here. The Mahabharata states, Nabhuta Sangha Samstano Dehasya Paramatmana. The body of the Supreme Lord is not composed of any combination of material elements. Also from the Mahabharata, Amritasho Mitavapu. His personal expansions, our personal bodies, are all immortal. We'll just read one more paragraph and then we can take. This is about the forms. It's interesting. This particular addition to the Srimad Bhagavatam, the appendix to the Srimad Bhagavatam, first deals with the forms, and then after this paragraph, it talks about the names, the forms, the names, the abode, remember, the entourage are all transcendental. So here we're talking about the forms. And then tomorrow we'll start with the names and the abodes and qualities of pastimes. So one more paragraph. The Srimad Bhagavatam itself contains many passages attesting to the absolute nature of the Lord's forms. Here are a few. Shabdam Ramadad Vapu, appearing in your transcendental form as the Vedas and as the personal feature of the absolute truth. Here's another quote. Yad Tad Vapurvati Vibhushana Yuda Avyakta Chid Vyakta Madarayad Vibhu. It's from the 8th canto. That transcendental body, which is appearing with its ornaments and weapons, has been assumed by the Almighty Lord as the spiritual manifestation of Himself, who is materially manifested. Bhavanda Pratatimyata, a 10th canto. She bound him up just like an ordinary child. Of course, that's reference to the Dhammadhara pastime. Satcha Ajahnanantananda. The Vishnumurtis all had eternal and limited forms full of knowledge and bliss and existing beyond the influence of time. What pastime is that? Can anyone guess? Yeah, the Brahma Vimohan pastimes, where Krishna manifested himself as all the coward boys and calves and then showed Lord Brahma that they were all Vishnu Tattva. Swecha Mayatna Tu Bhuta Mayasya. There's another quote from the 10th canto. His body is composed of his own desire rather than of his material elements. His body is composed of his own desire, which is an interesting statement. And then finally, and Twayeva Nitya Shuka Bodha Tanau, in you whose body is full of eternal happiness and consciousness. So I think we'll end today. Any questions or comments about anything that I said? Yes?
You're describing the mindset of people who are quoting as if they know something and not actually quoting from the source.
Yeah.
What's the best way to understand the difference between someone who's actually divine and someone who's actually innocent?
That's a good question. An actual demoniac person. Namam Dushkutina Mohaka version taking it out of now. Maya Pritigana Vasudabhava Mashuta. Krishna gives the people who are not surrendering to him. Not all those four persons are demoniac. Like the Mudha is not necessarily demoniac. He's just Mudha. Mudha means it's like an ass, just working hard all day long, no time for self-realization. He's innocent. Generally Mudhas are innocent. Pajante Naradama, lowest of mankind. That means people who are uncivilized. That means us Samaritans. I was thinking about that. Actually, I was thinking about that today, about Americans. Sorry, I'm an American also. But we don't have much culture, culture of hospitality, culture of caring for each other. We were talking about this yesterday. That, we were talking to some devotees yesterday, that we don't have a culture of caring in our movement. You know, if some devotee goes to the hospital, we will not go to see him. We'll just say, well, that's his karma. Or even if we go to the hospital and see him, we'll just tell him he's got his body to tolerate. And so, you know, we don't keep our promises. When someone takes initiation, vows, to follow four regulated principles, and 4 years later they're smoking ganja. So that means lack of culture. That's Naradama. That's a Naradama culture. American culture is more or less a Naradama culture. I mean, there's certain good things. We have freedom of speech. I understand all that. But, you know, it's not a high culture. You know, we don't go to see the deep. Like you see so many devotees I mentioned before live around here. And in India, you know, at least people of a higher culture would not think of not going to see. They'd be afraid of not going to see the deities in the morning. Because you want Krishna to bless you throughout the rest of the day. I mean, if they're materialistic, right? Mm-hmm. They're going to go to see, you know, in Jaipur, it's not that everybody's a pure devotee, there are very few pure devotees in Jaipur. But they're thinking, you know, I'm going to do good in business, and Krishna's God. So there's a culture, or hospitality. Someone comes to your house. And in America, you know, you go to someone's house and they say, go away. You can have them in your house and you knock on the door. And they happen to be your disciples. They say, oh, go away, Guru Dev, come back another day. So, but in India, you go in and someone really takes care of you. You know, even if you have a Titi Narayan, and even an uninvited guest is treated like Narayan. You feel like Prabhupada describes how it is. He did that, his parents did that, etc. So that's Niradama. But Niradama is generally innocent also. Mayaya, Aprita, Jnana. Now we're getting to some of the demons. But not necessarily. Mayaya, Aprita, Jnana means whose knowledge is stolen by illusion. They may be innocent or demonic. Actually, these terms, these four different categories, are not mutually exclusive. You can be a Mayaya Pratigyana and a Suramabha Maswata simultaneously. So Mayaya Pratigyana means you're just an illusion, basically. Your knowledge is stolen by illusion. You may be innocent or you may be demoniac. But a Suramabha Maswata means demoniac. That they've taken shelter, Ashrita. And that means their whole being is envy. That's what demoniac means. I mean, just like if you have to take one word to really typify an out-and-out person who is, let's say, funny, who is envious. Envious. Because, you know, someone can be lusty and not demoniac. Someone can be angry and not demoniac. And someone can be demoniac and also angry, but envious of the Supreme Lord. They get angry when they hear that God is being glorified, or even God exists. So some people preach demoniac philosophy, but they don't actually believe it. They just have some emotional issues. They may not be demoniac. But one who's very being, like Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, of course that was the pastime, is just focused on that. That's demoniac. Does that answer the question? So any other questions or comments? Or arguments or problems or issues you'll get to? Yeah, that's your opinion.
Comment up to demoniac. In verse in 16th chapter where Krishna gives the six qualities, which would be interesting. Because besides the anger and the harshness, you have pride.
Pride.
Conceit and arrogance.
But sometimes you find, these are demoniac qualities, but sometimes you find people who are innocent who are also prideful, arrogant, and even deceitful. See, the qualities don't necessarily mean that someone is an absolute demon. That means they may be acting right now.
Under demoniac nature.
Mm-hmm. But the question, my understanding of the question is, you know, who's a real demon? Mm-hmm. You know, in one sense, we act demoniacally sometimes too. I mean, let's say if I get angry, one time I got angry at my computer. Because it wasn't cooperating, not one time. Many times. Now that's not a godly nature to get angry at your computer. But it doesn't mean I'm a demon. Just, you know, I forgot who I was. I forgot that I was supposed to be compassionate to computers. Yeah.
Well, say for example, again, going to the 16th chapter.
Yeah.
It says the nature of the demon is they say this world is unreal.
Maybe yeah, yeah.
That's, no guided control. Mm-hmm. There's a secular.
That's envy.
So, right. But you may, it seems to me, you may find people in the scientific community who hold to that.
Yeah.
But they actually also have, they also may be calling themselves Christians nominally. Or they, it's like this mix.
Yeah, it's mixed. I mean, Kali Yuga, another statement probably made the demons and devotees are the same body. So you know, we all have some demoniac tendencies, we all have. In Kali Yuga, you really can't tell that much because it's mixed. It's really mixed in Kali Yuga. In previous yugas, it was really simple. I mean, Shishupal, you know, you're not too mixed, Shishupal. You just went and blasphemed Krishna 100 times knowing you were going to be killed. I mean, that's a no-brainer. That's a demon. Hiranyakashipu, you know, just dedicating his whole life to hurting his son and getting rid of, you know, killing Vishnu. That's a demon. But in Kali Yuga, things are rather mixed. You know. But for those who are too, being are trying to be Madhyama Adhikaris, for those who are too much into demoniac things, we should avoid. Those who are blasphemers, we should avoid. Although, you know, if you happen to be Lord Nityananda, you can say you're not blasphemers. But we, you know, we have to understand our limitations. A second-class devotee is not supposed to, is supposed to avoid the envious, approach the innocent, and also, because everyone has some envy and innocence in them, that we have to come up with strategies, like Prabhupada said, in like a pin, out like a plow. Like prasada, let's say if someone is really envious, blaspheming God, we give them prasada. We don't avoid them completely. Because we understand that prasada. I mean, I'll give you a practical example of someone who became Krishna conscious. He was so envious before. One of my disciples in Fiji, he lived next to a temple in a city called Lambasa. It's not important, the name of the city. And there was the temple there, and his house was right, you know, the house was just a temple, the temple was just a house. And there was kirtan going on. And he would, sometimes he would get drunk all the time, and just to bother the devotees, he would hang up bodies of animals right on the property boundary. And the houses are this close, like between me and where Jagannath over there. That's how close the house was. So you can imagine seeing a body of a goat hanging this close to Hare Krishna temple. And he would yell in his drunken stupor at the devotees. So, you know, that's pretty demoniac. And then, but what happened is that his two daughters, they became interested in Krishna consciousness, and they snuck over to the temple whenever their father wasn't looking. And so they were chanting and everything, and even his wife. You know, they would just wait, because the guy could be really heavy. So, like that. So, just, but there was one devotee in the temple who was very merciful. Her name was Tilakini. Small lady, very nice lady. She would daily bring this guy some prasada. So he took the prasada, And then, one day he woke up and he was a devotee. And now he's one of our main leaders in Fiji. And there's even the story of the temple president in Dallas, Nityananda. Maybe you've heard him tell that story. He was suing the movement. He was going to court against the Hare Krishna movement. He hated the movement so much. And now he's a great devotee. So here, I mean, here's two examples of people acting really demoniacally. But because they were thinking of Krishna, you know, somehow they were thinking, I hate those Hare Krishnas. They became devotees. So if you can trick someone into chanting Hare Krishna, even probably if you have to hate someone, you should hate Krishna. Because at least you'd be thinking of Krishna. So, on that happy note, I think we should end class with this time. Prashanna, all glory to His vibration.
Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda, Hari 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 Bo.